Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. On August 30th, the last American Air Force jet left Afghanistan after a prolonged and deadly involvement in the country. But hundreds of Americans were still waiting to leave amid the chaos of the withdrawal, and many thousands more Afghans were not able to get out. Some did, however, and in the coming weeks, about 500 are expected to arrive here in Illinois. A little later in the show, we'll hear from organizations working to welcome refugees about the process of relocating to central Illinois. First, though, we wanted to speak with someone who has firsthand experience of coming to a new country twice. Omidullah Barikzai is originally from Afghanistan, and his life spans the U.S. occupation there. He was about 4 years old when his family sought refuge in Russia in the early 2000s. They later resettled in Rock Island, Illinois, where he continues to live. Omidullah, welcome to the 21st. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. Hi, everybody.
So you left Afghanistan when you were very young. Can you tell us a bit about what your parents shared with you about why they chose to leave the country and what living there was like for them?
Yeah, so my parents originally left because my father was actually in Army. He was in Army during Najib's time. And due to the collapse of the government at the time, he actually went originally by himself with the Soviet soldiers. You know, he left Afghanistan. And later on, when he came back to marry my mother, he married my mother, and then they kind of left together back to Russia because he was still scared kind of from persecution from Taliban.
Interesting. So he didn't, you didn't come straight from Afghanistan to the U.S. What was the time in Russia like?
Well, in Russia, I mean, I can consider it like my home, basically. I grew up there, right? I mean, my Russian is way better than my native language because of all the schooling and the friends and everything that I have. So definitely, I would call it as my second home because, I mean, I was four when I moved there and I grew up there. And Moscow is a big city. I mean, it's the capital of Russia. So it was definitely an interesting time.
And so can you talk about how does your family go from Afghanistan to Russia and then end up in Rock Island, Illinois?
Yeah, so we initially when we moved with, because like I said, my father was already there, but when we moved there as a family to Russia in the early 2000s, we registered with the like organization that resettles immigrants, like refugees. So the refugee resettlement program in Russia at the time was early 2000s wasn't that big, so they weren't resettling a whole lot of people. But about 2 or 3 years into the program, they actually started resettling people. And we were actually one of the first lucky people at the time to get selected to be resettled to UK. At the time, my family did not want to resettle. So we kind of just decided to stay put in Russia and see what happens because we were kind of liking it and everything was going good in Russia. So we stayed, and then until 2012, when they were kind of wrapping up that resettlement program for refugees from Russia, in particular, they were reaching out to everybody that had like any kind of cases or anything left with them to see if anybody wanted to kind of leave Russia or they just kind of permanently wanted to stay. And when they reached out to us and told us that the United States wanted us to kind of resettle in U.S., at first we considered it was a joke. I mean, like, if you look at it, last time we heard from them was like 2003 or 2004 when they offered us to resettle. And then going to 2012, when you get a call out of nowhere, my mom thought someone was just pranking her. But they're being serious. You know, we went to the interview to the embassy and everything. And then they asked us the question of where in the U.S. would you like to resettle? And we didn't know anybody. So the only thing we told them is as long as the weather is the same as in Moscow, we're good. So that's how we ended up being here in the Midwest.
So as long as the weather's the same. So how do you, is the weather in Rock Island the same as it was in Moscow as you remember it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, it gets cold as there. Okay. It gets a little hotter in here, but as far as the cold, definitely.
So what was it like adjusting to life in Rock Island when you moved there? How old were you?
I was about 14 and a half, so turning 15, so a teenager. I started here like in the eighth grade. The first day of school, definitely. I remember like today, it was just, I went to school and I got my schedule and like not knowing anybody, not getting a tour or something with the broken English that I had, I tried to navigate through my class. I remember I went to wrong lunch. So I went to like, they had like four different lunches. I went to a wrong lunch because I just like assumed like, you know, you're just going to order. And I went to lunch and then I went to class and it was empty. And the teacher was like, oh, people went to lunch. We had like a class lunch break, and then you go back to that class. I didn't know that. So definitely adjusting was a little hard to school. And then the one thing that I remember, it was a bummer when I found out that we have to go all the way to 12th grade, because in Russia, we only had 11. So like, oh man, one more extra year of school.
So you weren't excited about the extra year of schooling. I can't believe they didn't give you a tour when you came to the new school from a new country. That's remarkable. How do you view it? Are you glad your family made the move from Russia to Rock Island?
Definitely. I mean, at first, like I said, Russia is, to me, is like my second home. So I miss it a lot at first, like at least the first 2 years. All of us, not just me. I mean, everyone in my family is like, what did we do to ourselves? You know, why did we move here and stuff? Because, I mean, there was a barrier of language. There's a barrier of, like, you know, having friends.
Sure.
Being out, you know, like not knowing. It's an unfamiliar environment. Obviously, everybody's going to be having some, you know, frustration of getting used to it. But overall, now, I mean, I like it. Like, U.S. is becoming my second home as well. So, I mean, by the time that I lived here, I graduated from high school. I went to college. I work full time and I'm studying my master's degree now. So definitely this is becoming my home. So definitely a good choice, I think, here.
Yeah. Amidala, I have to imagine in recent weeks, it's been difficult to see Afghans trying to flee the images from the Kabul airport. What was your reaction to seeing the U.S. leave Afghanistan?
I mean, those images were very shocking to me. I mean, I know some of my family members that live literally about, like, you could consider like 10 minutes walk from the airport because of those houses. I mean, those neighborhoods are very close. So they live about 10 minutes from the airport. And I mean, just, you know, one thing is media, but also they were recording some of the things and stuff that I got from them. It's just unimaginable to see all those people. I mean, everyone is afraid. I mean, nobody imagined it to go down that fast. I mean, nobody predicted it to happen that fast. And the way that it happened as well is just impossible. I mean, like, people are just so scared because they remember the last time Taliban's ruled. I mean, everybody that remembers it, all the adult, I mean, like, the older generations in Afghanistan remembers the cruelty that they, you know, have done to people. So they're all afraid. And I mean, the rush of young people at the airport, I mean, people like you could say around my age and stuff that were very young when Talibans were ruling or were born at that time, within the past 20 years or so, they had the freedom, you know, to do what they want, to wear jeans, you know, because that's one of the things that Talibans don't allow to do, like wearing jeans or wearing certain type of clothes and stuff. I mean, it's just unimaginable that those young teenagers or young adults that are in their early 20s now having to live under that government. I mean, it's just very shocking to me. I mean, how fast it happened and the way it happened.
Are you still worried about your family that you have there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we are in contact. We give them a call and stuff. And then, like, you know, the Taliban so far have been, like, saying things on media, and but they're still kind of doing their cruelty. I mean, I see some, you know, there's social medias and there's news outlets, right? So news outlets there, I mean, definitely get filtered because, you know, Taliban's don't let news agencies do their job, obviously, because of the filtering they're trying to do. But you see it on social media. I mean, they're definitely still doing what they want. I mean, they're still being cruel to people. They're still hitting women. They're still, and there's protests in Kabul. What was it, yesterday or the day before? For Panjshir, because of like the cruelty the Taliban are doing in Panjshir, they're just killing innocent people that have nothing to do, like civilians in Panjshir, just because they're from that area. And Panjshir is the only kind of valley, or you can say like a small little district within Afghanistan that's still kind of fighting Taliban's. But even civilians that are trying to escape or something, they cut off all the electricity to Panjshir, they cut off food supplies, they cut off everything to Panjshir, just because they're still resisting. And I mean, okay, one thing is military side, but, you know, killing innocent women, children, and civilians is just not right.
Last question I want to ask you is, do you have any hopes or advice for the Afghans who are coming to the U.S. now?
Yeah, definitely the hope or the advice, I would say that I don't think anybody's happy, at least at first, you know, that they're moving out and leaving their family behind. So to all those people, kind of just, you know, don't lose your hope. Things will get better. And as you settle in here, hopefully things in Afghanistan start getting a little better. And the least thing you can do, if once you start getting more settled in here, you can help them financially, or later on, you know, flight start or something like that, you can help them out, or go visit, hopefully, you know, if things settle back in. But while you're in US, definitely try to reach out to the community, reach out to other Afghans, reach out to, you know, all the support that is available. Because that's one thing, you know, if once you come into an unfamiliar country, as you hesitate to ask for help because you don't want to be a burden on someone. So definitely, if you move into a community where it has the Afghans and stuff, you're always welcome to ask for help. And I'm sure anybody that also kind of came as a refugee to a different country will help you, whether they're Afghans or not.
Omidullah Barikzai was born in Afghanistan. His family came to Rock Island by way of Russia as refugees when he was a teenager. He still calls the Quad Cities home. Omidullah, thank you for sharing your story with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. And thanks to all the listeners. Have a good day.
If you're just joining us, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. I want to bring two more voices into the conversation now. As we mentioned earlier in the show, Illinois is expected to welcome about 500 refugees from Afghanistan, and hundreds more are already our neighbors. To talk more about their journey here and the relocation process for refugees, we're joined by Lisa Wilson, Executive Director of the Refugee Center based in Champaign. We're also joined by Kaylee Fisher, who's a church mobilizer with World Relief Quad Cities. World Relief is a multinational organization that partners with local churches across the U.S. to provide support services for immigrants and refugees. Lisa and Kaylee, welcome to The 21st. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And listeners, you can join our conversation. Our number is 800-222-9455. If you have questions for our guests about the refugee resettlement process, or maybe your family came to the U.S. as refugees, we want to hear your story. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. Lisa, I'm going to begin with you. How many Afghan refugees are you anticipating to arrive in Champaign-Urbana?
Well, we've told our partners at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops that we can accommodate between 5 and 10 families. So how many are in each family, we don't know, but that's what we've reported to our partners. We are a remote resettlement agency through the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops.
And would these be people with special immigrant visas? Those are the Afghans who worked with American military or civil authorities?
That's correct, except now that we are also accepting immigrants that are coming through the Afghan Parolee Support Program. And what that is they're given humanitarian parole, which is essentially the word we use to mean that they've been given permission to enter the country.
Yeah, good clarification. That's nothing has nothing to do with the sort of criminal justice sense of the word parole. It just means a special permission.
Yeah, you said. Absolutely okay. Nothing to do with that.
Right. Okay. Kaylee, what about in the Quad Cities area? Do you have any idea how many refugees or families you're expecting from Afghanistan?
Yeah. So our office here in the Quad Cities, our fiscal year starts in October. And so from October to October, we're expecting about 450 refugees to arrive here in the Quad Cities. And then in addition to that, we've advocated that we can take 150 humanitarian parolees from Afghanistan. And so the timeline for that, we're still kind of waiting to hear, but we're very much looking forward to welcoming them here. And it's definitely going to be an all hands on deck welcome.
Yeah. What is the journey like for them? How does somebody, you know, we've seen the images of the airport in Kabul. Let's say somebody made it onto one of those military flights out of Afghanistan. What journey will they have taken before they actually set foot in Illinois?
So from my understanding, the Department of State is managing a 24/7 processing site near the Dulles Airport near DC. And about 250 staff from the Department of State and USAID are working shifts to welcome them and process them. And they are then going to military stations. So we have 8 installations around the country, Virginia, New Mexico, Wisconsin, Texas, New Jersey, Indiana. And that's where they're kind of going through some processing. And then from there, they'll be moved and relocated throughout the U.S. There are, I think, like over 200 different nonprofit organizations that are partnering with the government to help resettle all these families. So they're working as quickly as possible to get them settled. But we are definitely seeing some progress being made, which is very encouraging.
And Lisa, we need to take a break on our program in about a minute. But until then, can you talk about what are the sort of hour one needs when people first arrive in Illinois? What sort of things are you doing to greet them and see that their needs are met?
Well, before they arrive at the airport, we need to secure safe housing for them. So there are lots of steps that are done before they actually arrive at the airport. And that is the most crucial, is finding safe and affordable housing. We also will provide them with culturally appropriate meals for their first few days, also with toiletries and linens, cookware, other just immediate needs. So if we receive more than one family at a time, that becomes a pretty big effort to find all of those things in a timely manner.
Sure, I can imagine. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll continue our conversation. We're speaking with Lisa Wilson, Executive Director of the Refugee Center in Champaign, and Kaylee Fisher, a church mobilizer with World Relief Quad Cities, about the effort to relocate several hundred people from Afghanistan here into Illinois in the wake of America's withdrawal from that country. We're going to continue after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us.
Support for the 21st comes from Christy Clinic. Christy Clinic, providing health care to the community for more than 90 years. Local procedures, providers, specialties, and choice. Christy Clinic is focused on caring for the community.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the effort to relocate several hundred Afghan citizens who are refugees now coming to Illinois, part of a group of thousands coming to the United States in the wake of the U.S. military's withdrawal from Afghanistan. We're talking about that with Lisa Wilson, Executive Director of the Refugee Center based in Champaign, and Kaylee Fisher, who's a church mobilizer with World Relief Quad Cities. World Relief is an international organization that partners with local churches in the U.S. to provide support services for immigrants and refugees. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you. 800-222-9455 is the number. If you have a question for our guests, or maybe if your family came to the U.S. as refugees, we'd love to hear your story. 800-222-9455 is the number. Lisa, before the break, you mentioned housing was the number one priority. We've seen some discussion that, at least in Chicago, there were difficulties with landlords not wanting to rent to refugee groups. Have you had any issues like that in Central Illinois?
No, we haven't. Actually, we've had a lot of cooperation. The issue we have in the Champaign-Urbana area is that so much of the housing available is geared towards students, and it's not really appropriate or located in an area that's suitable for large families.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. You wouldn't want to go from Afghanistan to Green Street, you know, the nightlife scene there right downtown is your first step. Kaylee, what about in the Quad Cities? Have you had any issues with finding housing? Is that a challenge there?
It definitely is. We have not quite gotten to that part of our planning yet, because we're still waiting on final numbers. However, we are kind of scouting out options here in the Quad Cities. We are considering inviting our churches to consider putting up host homes for our families, considering the number of Afghans that we will be expecting in a short period of time. We really rely on our volunteers in our community to help provide. And so we're looking at a lot of different options, but we're just so grateful for our community being so supportive.
So Kaylee, earlier in the program, we spoke with a young man whose family came to the Quad Cities. They had lived in Moscow for a number of years before that. I'm wondering what in your experience brings people to Illinois? Why are they coming here? Do they have a choice in the matter? How does that work?
So that's a great question. Most of the time, refugees will have what's called a U.S. tie. It's someone who is here as a connection for them. And it can be a family member, it can be a friend, a pastor. And so oftentimes when we're looking at where to resettle them, we do take that into account because we do want them to have someone who's there to support them. And so what we're seeing here in the Quad Cities, we mostly have two populations right now. We have Congolese and Burmese families. Those are probably the largest communities that we serve, and soon to be Afghans as well. And so we are noticing that they are able to have that cohesive community and support system, which is why we see a lot more families from those areas coming to this region.
And Lisa, I wonder if you have any different perspective on that. I mean, are there situations where maybe people don't have a say in where they end up and it's just sort of a drawing from a hat?
That would be rare. However, we have been informed that we may receive some families that do not have a U.S. tie, and that, of course, will take additional support. Like Kaylee said, the U.S. tie is usually family member, friend, former coworkers that they have some sort of connection to and feel comfortable with. So, but under these circumstances, they may be arriving without that connection. So then we'll be here, and hopefully our community will step up to support those families that come, and especially those families that come without a U.S. tie.
Lisa, how does it work when you are looking for housing? I wonder if, on the one hand, you want to make sure that the people who are coming here can build community with people with whom they share a common language and culture. But on the other hand, I imagine you don't want to create, what would the term be, like ghettos of just, people from one area. How do you take that into consideration? How do you work to develop that community without, creating, the downsides that can come with that, I guess?
Well, first of all, we will be contacting the Afghan community that's already here and talk to them about spaces that may be available in buildings they live in or circumstances that they're aware of where people could move. We do think it's important to try and keep the families close. It's helpful if the children are in the same school system, for example. But we communicate with landlords and with the community that's already here to find the best circumstances we can.
All right, we have a caller on the line at 800-222-9455. Paul is on the line from Urbana. Paul, thank you for calling in.
Hi. Yeah, I have a lot to say, but on this issue, and I'm sure that people have concerns about employment, but I think that we need an Afghan community center and a restaurant if we're going to be hosting. I don't know how many Afghans are here, but it would be a great thing for the community, the cultural exchange, and would employ some talents that some of these people probably have. And I would appreciate it greatly. So I don't want to be light about it, but I think we have a great debt to the people in the Pashtun region, the whole Western world does, I'm afraid. Thank you.
All right, Paul, thank you for the call. That is a good, raises an interesting question. Lisa, how does employment work? Where does that fit into the picture of attempting to resettle refugees?
Well, they come in with employment authorization, so that's very good that they are able to get jobs. Now, where they're able to get jobs really depends on their experiences in their home country and language acquisition. For example, those that know more English than others are more readily employable. Other refugees and SIVs that come without the language acquisition tend to work in the manufacturing plants or perhaps doing work for Uber and Grubhub and delivery services like that until they're able to learn enough English to then pursue more stable employment.
And Kaylee, what about in the Quad Cities? Are there any of the sort of community centers or restaurants or the sort of cultural opportunities to bridge the Afghan communities there with the people who have been in America for longer?
Yes, definitely. So we definitely value the cultural aspect of what they bring to the table when they arrive here. And we want to celebrate that and honor that. We are very fortunate here in the Quad Cities. I do feel as though we are seeing more and more culture every day. We do have a lot of different restaurants. I don't know by chance if we have an Afghan restaurant. However, the idea of a community center is a wonderful idea. A lot of nonprofit organizations, including World Relief, do already do a lot of the same things as what Paul was probably thinking of when he thought of a community center. We do a lot of different programs that help support them and celebrate their unique attributes in their culture. And one of the things that we do here in the Quad Cities is we have a culturally appropriate food pantry, which is a great resource for our families because we know, just like here in the US, that food is definitely a comfort, and we want to provide that in their context. So we gather food that is more appropriate for what they are used to. And so we continually use that as a resource monthly. And as of now, we're serving over 400 people a month, and that will continue to grow as we have more families arriving.
Lisa, I wonder if you have encountered any pushback in the efforts to resettle refugees in Illinois, right? I think back, we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of 9/11, and really anybody who, you know, even vaguely fit in certain people's imagination of somebody who might be Muslim, right? Whether they were from the Middle East or Central Asia or even India and Pakistan, North Africa, there was a lot of harassment at that time. I wonder, have people turned on a corner on that, or is that something that is still a concern as you're welcoming these new families here?
I am not aware of any instances in the Champaign-Urbana area of pushback. I think this community has been incredibly supportive of immigrants and refugees and will continue to do so.
And Kaylee, what about in the Quad Cities? Has that been an issue at all there?
I think that there are always going to be people who are not as welcoming. However, you know, there's only so much we can do about that. I mean, we do our best to surround our families with people who are loving and supporting them in their journey. But, you know, we just continue to keep working. I mean, whether we're experiencing pushback or not, we're just focused on our mission. So, I mean, you know, it's neither here nor there, but we're continuing to advocate for our families and continue to support them in their journey.
Lisa, I understand the Refugee Center was born of the resettlement of refugees from Vietnam in around 1980. Are there lessons from that resettlement operation or from other subsequent resettlements that you're applying to help settle these refugees from Afghanistan now?
Definitely, definitely. The Refugee Center was formed out of a need to welcome newer refugees from Vietnam. The first Vietnam refugees to arrive in the area recognized there need to be some sort of formal organization and a way to welcome the newer arrivals and get them acclimated to life in the Champaign-Urbana area. And we're learning lessons from that experience every day in terms of, you know, meeting people where they are and providing culturally appropriate food and experiences in the community. It's really been invaluable, that experience. And we still have people who are affiliated with the Refugee Center who came out of that initial Vietnamese resettlement. So we're able to learn from their experience and take those lessons and apply them to this Afghan resettlement.
Lisa, we're coming to the end of our time, but if somebody's listening to this and they feel motivated, they want to do something to sort of pitch into this effort, is there something that people in the community can do to help those who are relocating here?
Absolutely. We are reaching out to various faith-based communities and other organizations to ask for kind of an assessment of how they might be able to support the refugees that are arriving. Individually, people can go to our website at therefugeecenter-cu.org or call our office at 217-344-8455.
And again, you're in the Champaign-Urbana area. Kaylee, in the Quad Cities, what about there? If people in the community, if they want to try and get involved, what steps can they take?
Yeah, I would say definitely reach out to us. We have a lot of information on our website, but some of the ways that you can get involved is by donating old furniture or clothes or household items that maybe you don't need anymore. A lot of these families are starting completely from scratch, so we want to give them the tools to be successful here. And we also have volunteer opportunities to help serve them in many, many different ways, whether that's helping with youth mentorship or ESL classes or volunteering in our food pantry, or just being a companion. We have a lot of different opportunities here in the Quad Cities. So I would just invite you to reach out to your closest nonprofit that is doing something to help these families and see how you can get involved.
Kaylee Fisher is a church mobilizer with World Relief Quad Cities. We've also been speaking with Lisa Wilson, director of the Refugee Center in Champaign. Kaylee and Lisa, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is all the time we have for our program today. Before we go, I do want to mention tomorrow we are planning to look back. It's been 20 years since 9/11. We're going to be remembering, where were you when you first heard the news? What did you make of it? And what do you make of the 20 years we've shared since then? We've already gathered some recollections. We'd love to hear more from listeners. You can send us an email, talk@21stshow.org. Even better yet, if you want to record a voice memo and email that to us. Again, the address is talk@21stshow.org. You can also call our voicemail line, which is 217-300-2121. Anytime, day or night, leave a message. What do you remember? Where were you when you first heard about 9/11? 217-300-2121. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Erica Scalise is our engagement producer, and our interns are Owen Henderson, Zainab Qureshi, and Brielle Skullerk. Technical direction and engineering comes from Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.